This is the Daily Dope, presented by The Gaming Gang for Friday, January 6th, 2012. It's time for another irrelevant look at the gaming news of the day. Howdy, folks. I'm your host, Jeff McAleer. Are you ready for today's latest headlines? I know I am. AEG has announced a special three-phased release for their upcoming Emperor Edition set for Legend of the Five Rings, the collectible card game. AEG Stronghold stores only will receive the Emperor Edition boosters for pre-release beginning January 27th through the 29th. Special pre-release events will be held in a draft format. Participants in these pre-release events are going to receive a special promo card too. Then, from February 17th to the 19th, those same Stronghold stores will start to receive Emperor Edition starter decks for another pre-release event. The starter deck pre-release events will be in sealed deck format for those events. Participants, once again, will receive a special promo for taking part. All stores that carry L5R will receive Emperor Edition in its entirety on February 27th. Of course, those Stronghold stores are allowed to begin selling their Emperor Editions on those pre-release dates. AEG also really is sorry for all the delays that Emperor Edition has faced. As a way to make it up to L5R players, you're going to find a new distribution among the booster packs. Instead of the prior setup of 10 common, 4 uncommon, and 1 rare card in prior boosters, AEG will now have 9 common, 5 uncommon, and 1 rare card throughout the Emperor Edition boosters. Even more L5R fun is taking place right now as a letter from Kolot reveals all that's going on while you're waiting for the Emperor Edition to arrive. It reads, "Agent, the Imperials are fools. As you are aware, there have been setbacks in their plans for their so-called Emperor Edition. These setbacks have left us a window of opportunity, one that Master Tiger wishes to take full advantage of. While the Imperials wait for their new product to arrive, we shall provide the people of Rokugan with that which they desire most. Visit l5r.com/kolotedition.pdf. There you will find a package that you can print and use for all tournaments, sanctioned, storyline, and otherwise, through March 1st, 2012. The local tournament organizer may use our materials if he wishes to swear his fealty to the Kolot and have his event be Kolot Edition legal. Otherwise, he may still run his event as a Celestial Edition tournament. This is effective starting January 2, 2012. Spread the word so all will know of Master Tiger's generosity. He is allowing everyone to play for 2 months for free. We will show the Imperials the meaning of the word Premium. Yasuki Makoto, Kolot." Obviously, the time is now to start getting excited for the new Emperor Edition with new themes, cards, and more. Two new games are coming from Fred Distribution. 1812, The Invasion of Canada from Academy Games, and the latest release from Arkham Horror and Defenders of the Realm designer Richard Lanius, Dragon Rampage. First, The Invasion of Canada. The year is 1812. Great Britain and her allies are battling Napoleon for control of Europe. In response to British seizure of American ships and goods, the young United States declares war on Britain and invades Canada. You and up to 4 other players take command of the armies of the British Redcoats, Canadian Militia, and Native Americans, or of the American Regulars and American Militia to decide the fate of the Americas. The action takes place on a huge historically accurate map that spans the US and Canada from Detroit to Montreal. Players from each faction cooperate to gain control of key towns and forts. 1812, The Invasion of Canada is a tremendous starting point for the Birth of America series and is one of those rare games that allows players to dive into the game quickly yet be rewarded with dynamic and strategic gameplay that will keep players coming back for more. It features fast, intuitive, and fun gameplay that involves teamwork and strategic planning in a historic and educational setting. Uh-oh, educational? Ooh, do we want to learn something? This is the game for people who want an enjoyable and manageable introduction to historic conflict-based games. 1812, The Invasion of Canada features a large, beautiful mounted map of eastern Canada and the northern eastern United States. The Birth of America series from Academy Games provides an outstanding experience for people new to conflict games, as well as those interested in the history of the United States. Every game in the series will include historical information about the conflict that is explored in that game, providing players with an educational, experience, as well as historical context of the events leading up to the conflict. I have to say, without even seeing the game, if it's coming from Academy Games, I'm pretty darn sure it's going to be good. 1812, The Invasion of Canada is for 2 to 5 players ages 12 and up, and should be playable within 1 to 2 hours. The MSRP is $64.99. In Richard Lanius's Dragon Rampage, each player becomes one of the adventurers, all with different abilities, trying to score the most points at the end of the game by fighting against and or running from the dragon that just woke up, and by tallying up the treasure and gold obtained in the dungeon. Players roll 8 specially designed dice and choose whether to focus on grabbing treasure from the dragon or from another player, fighting the dragon, protecting themselves and their treasure, or running for the exit.
Should I stay or should I go now? If I stay, there will be trouble.
You know the rest. Dragon Rampage also features a large, beautiful, mounted map that takes the characters through the dragon's dungeon. Even though players are in the same party, this is not a cooperative game. Victory points are awarded differently depending on how the game ends, so players will need to watch what each other is doing and react and respond accordingly. Dragon Rampage is for 3 to 5 players, ages 10 and up, playable in about an hour and a half to 2 hours, and the MSRP is $59.99. You can learn all about these two new titles at eagle-griffin.com. I really miss the days when gamers had just a plethora of different magazines we could choose from, depending on what our favorite genre in the hobby was. Or there were actually some magazines that covered everything. I remember the days when we used to have the Space Gamer, Dragon, Dungeon Magazine, The General from Avalon Hill, the Old Good Strategy and Tactics, the Midwestern Wargamers Association Newsletter, otherwise known as M1. That's a blast from the past. There was Conflict. There were all these various different magazines to choose from. It was great. Now, unfortunately, we don't have too many magazines that we can go purchase, and especially those that include games within them. There still is one historical gaming magazine that I really enjoy, and that's Against the Odds. It investigates military history from a broad perspective. The economic, political, religious, and social aspects of warfare are examined in concert with events on the battlefield. Every issue of Against the Odds features informative and insightful articles showcasing the history behind events, plus regular columns by noted game designers providing insight on the latest trends and events. A challenging, fun war game that drops the players into truly desperate situations, but gives them multiple options to alter history. Professionally printed graphics, complete with large playing maps and normally 200 to 360 die-cut playing pieces. The latest issue that's available features the game Right, Fierce, and Terrible. Most people think of the Hundred Years' War as a battle over the geography and dynastic questions of who would rule which parts of France. The Hundred Years' War is known for sieges, sacking, lots of misery, a few large battles like Crecy and Agincourt, and famous leaders like the Black Prince and Joan of Arc. But naval battles? Actually, the first significant action of the 115 Years' War took place off the coast of Flanders in 1340 and changed everything. The French had been dominating the Channel, largely through the services of hired Genoese galleys. They sacked several English cities and spread terror and dissatisfaction with King Edward amongst the population, halting the wool and wine trade, plus spreading the very real fear that the French might invade. The Battle of Sluys was a decisive victory for Edward III that gave the English command of the Channel and ensured the rest of the war would be fought on French soil. Now this important but little-known battle is yours for the trying, with Right, Fierce, and Terrible, the Battle of Sluys, the game at the core of Against the Odds, issue 34. Place yourself in the decisions faced by Edward III or the French admirals as you decide who will rule the waves and perhaps rule France. But if your expectations of the period centers on arrows, swords, and the deadly close-in fighting of armored knights, RFNT is still the game for you. One might almost ask, is it a naval game or a land game? And the answer is, both. Archery, ramming, grappling, and desperate melee are the tools of battle here, aimed at wearing away the enemy fleet's morale. Your morale will enjoy the colorful 22x34-inch map and full 1-inch counters, and your mind will enjoy the intrigue of designer Jeremy White's unusual game system, in which the battlefield of harbor and estuary is built as the game progresses, meaning that no two experiences will be quite the same. 7 scenarios allow you to explore the questions that have puzzled historians for years, and the 2 to 3 hour gameplay and quick setup diagrams mean you can try one approach and swap sides to try another, knowing much will be different this time around. Jeremy's rules are very accessible and include extensive examples of play. Edward III was wounded at Sluis, but won one of his most important victories. Can you change history? Also included in this issue is a second bonus game, Swarm, and is by the same designer as Right Fierce and Terrible, Jeremy White, along with his co-pilot Mark Asted. This small solitaire game depicts a common event from World War II, some German fighters trying to pick off a stray B-17. As far as Right Fierce and Terrible, it includes over 100 full-color assorted die-cut counters, 10-page rulebook, a couple of charts and tables. The complexity is medium, and its suitability for solitaire play is average. It's designed, as I mentioned, by Jeremy White, developed by Lambert Tower, and graphics by Mark Mahaffey. The upcoming issue 35 will include the game Boudica, the Warrior Queen. Boudica, 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 Boudica are just some of the ways historians have spelled and pronounced her name. And of course, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing most of those ways as well. But her name probably comes from the Celtic word meaning victory, and is one of the reasons she was raised to national hero status during the reign of her namesake queen, Victoria. Regardless of how the name is spelled or pronounced, she meant trouble for the Roman occupation of Britain. After her revolt succeeded in burning 3 major towns and slaughtering tens of thousands of Roman citizens and allies, the Emperor Nero seriously considered whether this distant land was worth the cost to stay. Governor G.S. Paulinus's remarkable victory, perhaps at the location later known as Watling Street, reaffirmed Roman domination. They would remain in Britain for another 300 years. But it might have been different. Can you, as the leader of a cluster of various independent Celtic tribes, cause enough trouble and loss to make the Romans leave your island? Can you, as the commander of scattered Roman troops, snuff out the rebellion more effectively than Paulinus? Will London burn or be saved? These are your challenges in Against the Odds issue 35, and the game is designed by Richard Berg. Boudica, the Warrior Queen, represents a full upgrade of the Druid game Richard designed for West End Games over 25 years ago, along with great counters and map art, including the period road net and location of tribal centers. You'll find streamlined mechanics, more involved possibilities and what-ifs, and a game driven by card play, somewhat like that used for Hammer of the Scots. Boudica will include a 22x34-inch map, 240 full-color half-inch die-cut counters, 36 operation/action cards, a 10-page rulebook, 1 combat chart, and has a low complexity of difficulty. The suitability for solitaire play is average, and it should play out in 3 to 4 hours. As mentioned, it's designed by Richard Berg, with development by Lambert Tover, and graphic design once again by Mark Mahaffey. I say Against the Odds is a fantastic magazine for those who enjoy historical gaming that isn't just the same old, that is, let's say, in all honesty, strategy and tactics. I mean, I love them to death, but strategy and tactics might as well change the name to Joe and Miranda. But Against the Odds always has great articles and interesting game designs, so head on over to atomagazine.com and give it a look. And finally, The Lord of the Rings has probably inspired thousands of poorly written and thought-out imitations, but been crowned the UK's best-loved book and sold millions upon millions of copies around the world. But according to newly declassified documents, it was damned by the Nobel Prize jury on the grounds of J.R.R. Tolkien's second-rate prose. Don't shoot the messenger, I'm just telling you. The mysterious workings of the Nobel Committee remain a secret until 50 years after the award is given, when the archive for that year is opened in the Nobel Library in Stockholm. Swedish reporter Andreas Ekström delved into 1961's previously classified documents on their release this week to find the jury passed over names including Lawrence Durrell, Robert Frost, Graham Greene, E.M. Forster, and Tolkien to come up with their eventual winner, Yugoslavian writer Ivo Andrić. While Andrić was lauded for the epic force for which he has traced themes and depicted human destinies drawn from the history of his country, other nominated writers received shorter shrift from the Nobel Committee, Ekström revealed in Swedish newspaper Sydsvenska Dagbladet. Oh, and trust me, I'm sure I mispronounced that newspaper's name. The prose of Tolkien, who was nominated by his friend and fellow fantasy author C.S. Lewis, quote, has not in any way measured up to storytelling of the highest quality, end quote, wrote jury member Anders Osterling. Frost, on the other hand, was dismissed because of his, quote, advanced age, end quote. He was 86 at the time, with the jury deciding the American poet's years were, quote, a fundamental obstacle, which the committee regretfully found it necessary to state, end quote. Forster was also ruled out because of his age, a consideration, luckily, that no longer bothers the jury, which awarded the prize to the 87-year-old Doris Lessing in 2007, with Osterling calling Forster, quote, a shadow of his former self with long-lost spiritual health, end quote. Durrell, meanwhile, quote, gives a dubious aftertaste because of his monomaniacal preoccupation with erotic complications, end quote, while Italian novelist Alberto Moravia, quote, suffers from a general monotony, end quote. Green, who never won the Nobel, was 1961's runner-up, with Danish writer Karen Blixen, author of Out of Africa, coming in third. I've been doing this as a bit of a personal and journalistic tradition the past 5 years or so, and this was the first time I had seen Tolkien's name among the suggested candidates, said Ekström. Today, there are usually about 300 suggestions each year. Back then, it was more often around 50. Not anyone can suggest a winner. The Swedish Academy invites certain academics, former winners, and other institutional representatives to nominate, and can itself, of course, nominate too. The Academy keeps a strict secrecy around the archives for 50 years, but doesn't reveal everything. The final decision is made without any notes ever becoming public. But the list of suggestions is indeed public with some commentary to it. Tolkien was nominated by C.S. Lewis. That was the first thing I saw. Lewis was a professor of literature and hence qualified to nominate. However, the short commentary from Anders Osterling, the dominant literary critic in the Academy, was fairly sour. He basically said about the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the result has not in any way measured up to storytelling of the highest quality. Damn. As I'm sure Mr. Osterling has shuffled off this mortal coil, and I don't try to be especially mean to the departed, I just have to say, millions upon millions of people know Tolkien's name. I'm sure everybody out there is wondering just who the fuck is Anders Osterling. That's it for today. Monday is our regularly scheduled podcast day, so the Daily Dope will be back Tuesday, January 10th. Until then, have a great weekend and try to stay warm. The Daily Dope is presented by The Gaming Gang, located at thegaminggang.com. Any similarities to an actual news program are certainly unintentional and, in fact, accidental.